I'm Aaron Meyer. This is the 19.9 Podcast. Today we're back talking to Jason Andreas, former Michigan State basketball player and reoccurring guest. We've had previous podcasts with Jason talking about paying college players. This time, we're circling back to talk about name, image, likeness.
I had an event in downtown Detroit a couple weeks ago that Coach Izzo was honored at, and a bunch of former players went and surprised him. So we had a chance to talk to him, and he was actually talking to us a little bit about NIL.
We also take some time to continue our fun with our NIL drafts and find out Jason's top five NIL athletes in Michigan State history. All right, we're ending on this. We got to get your NIL players from Michigan State history. So,
yeah, oh man, this might be one of the best questions ever. But
it's time to start the show. Welcome to the 19.9 Podcast. I am glad to have Jason Andreas back to talk about NIL and just dig into that. We had a chance to talk months ago about paying college athletes. Little did we know that it would come so fast and so furiously. But before we dive into that and do a little recap, I want to start where we've been starting with our guests this time of year. Just what does October mean to you? Or what did it mean in high school? And then as you were playing later at Michigan State, what did the dawn of a new season mean to you? What was the feeling in the air for you, and how'd you approach it?
Yeah, the floodgates have opened on the NIL piece, and I'm excited to that. But we'll start with an easier question. October, I don't know. Call me sappy, but October's the best, right? Like when you think of the sports world, like everything is happening right now, from high school sports all the way up to the pros, and man, it's just the best. I'm a Midwest guy too, and I love like the fall seasons too. The weather's perfect. I remember, you know, October is when you're going to football games at your high school and you're throwing your Letterman jacket on, and hanging out in the stands with your buddies and chasing girls and all that good stuff.
We had Aminu Timber like on. He played at Kentucky. He broke out his De La Salle letter jacket from Chicago. He's like, oh, I got my patches. He had a state champ patch on there. So do you have any you have any patches on that letter jacket?
Not like De La Salle, no. Small town in Ohio. I've got my Letterman jacket is actually above me in the guest room. It hangs in a closet.
There you go, see?
But yeah, I've got some patches on there, but nothing quite that impressive. But yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Yeah. It's that time of season. You know, we got Midnight Madness kicking off right earlier this month. You got, I mean, my guys tonight, Michigan State's their home opener exhibition game. I think they got Ferris State. So you got exhibition games going on. You got actual games coming early in November. You got playoff baseball. You got the Braves and the Astros on. Go Braves, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got that. You've got hockey starting up. You got NBA basketball kicking off. Like, I don't know, man. It's the absolute best time of year for all of that type of stuff. And it also, like, it's kind of like one last hurrah of great sports before you go into the cold season. Again, if you're listening from Florida, well, you don't
know about that.
But you know, if you're listening from the Midwest or the North or the East Coast, you know, like this is the last rod. November gets dark and cold, so it's like October is like when everything from a sports perspective comes together, and it's just a great time of year. And I would be remiss not to mention too, I got Michigan State football coming up this year or this Saturday, right? So we got rivalry games. You got rivalry weekends. Ohio State's got Penn State in the Big Ten. So you got all these big rivalry games going on. Again, that's a long answer, but you can tell I get excited about it because it is such an awesome time.
I remember last year when I was excited about Hoosiers football, not so much this year.
You guys gave Michigan State a good run.
I know,
though.
We did. I know,
You guys always do, man. I tell you, one of the harder games on our schedule was always Indiana, especially down at Indiana.
Yeah.
Tough place to play. And just, I don't know, just I feel like Indiana always prepares so well for Michigan State.
Sure.
So, ups and downs. We're having a great year this year as Michigan State, which is a surprise. But we'll see how long we can run with it.
See if we can get you basketball.
You might this year. Yeah. We'll see.
All right, let's do a quick recap. So, I mean, we started out with the premise last time of saying that the easy question is, you know, you ask anybody on the street, should you pay college athletes? And the answer probably 9 times out of 10 is going to be yes. It just seems like an easy answer. You see a product on the court that's of high quality and people paying to get in and buying merchandise, and there seems to be some kind of transaction that should occur and or that the athlete should benefit. And, you know, of course, they get some from their scholarship and the access to facilities and, you know, trainers and all that stuff. But there is, it hasn't changed that much. And I don't know if you want to just kind of get into where we landed on, but I think that we took a step in that direction, but because of the dominoes that we talked about in, you know, who gets paid what and how much should they make, we kind of took a step back because the system of amateur athletics and college athletics is something that we both love. And when you start to just kind of tip the apple cart over, sometimes you don't know what you're going to get afterwards, and taking a giant step toward just, all right, you know, everybody's getting paid, which is maybe where we're headed now. I don't know. So where'd you land on that? Or what have your thoughts been since?
I don't know. I feel like it's still very TBD. Like it's interesting. And I think there is definitely some positives that have come out of this, but to your point, you just mentioned, man, we've been talking about some sort of structure and some sort of process for potentially improving support and compensation for college athletes for decades now. Yeah. And then it felt like all of a sudden this summer, all of a sudden it was like, oh, the NCAA is stepping out of the game and have a free for all, do whatever you want. And you're like, wait, after 20 years of talking about this, that's the cohesive storyline that came together. Was the NCAA just walked away and said, well, we're not going to figure it out. You guys just go ahead and do whatever you want at the state level and good luck with it. Right. So I think to me, it was very surprising. Like I thought that there would be a lot more structure to it. So to me, it feels there's some positivity, but I also, it really scares me because it feels very discombobulated right now. Like I said, the NCAA, I feel like I hate on the NCAA a lot. They do some great things, of course, and I'm very, very fortunate to have played in the NCAA. But again, my gripe has been all along that they've had decades to come up with something, whether it be an improved scholarship program, whether it be some sort of like post-playing career platform, maybe medical support or things that we talked about in previous podcasts, coming up with something that made sense. Again, I always thought the easiest thing was to take the existing scholarship structure and add to it. Just say, okay, well, we're going to give each player, whether it's a revenue generating sport or non-revenue generating sport, whether it's male or female, and adding some sort of benefits on top of that, maybe an extra couple $100 a month, maybe just giving them a little bit more leeway and allowance in their rent that they're allowed to utilize and for apartments and things once they move outside of the dorm. So something like that I was hoping for. And then all of a sudden it just kind of becomes the Wild West and a free for all. And as you mentioned, it seems very unfair because it's being bounced between states. There's very loose guidelines. Some states have really dug their heels in. Some states haven't done anything yet. I read an article and I think you probably have seen it too. I think it was on ESPN, but really the kind of marquee name in the article was Mark Few.
Okay.
from Gonzaga. And you know, he was talking a lot about the recruiting side of things, which has always been a concern too, right? That's one of the pieces of paying athletes, that could disrupt the system. Is you got one state who's saying, okay, it's a free for all, pay your players whatever you want. And some states saying, hey, we're not going to participate in that yet. How's a college in that state that's not participating going to recruit? It's almost a complete black and white, you know, advantage, disadvantage for those two states. So you start to see programs and universities at any level sport, right? Again, revenue, non-revenue, male, female, that are going to have a hard time drawing recruits, at least in the interim, until something gets a little bit more ironed out in the long term.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the analogy you drew is just like the length of time that they had to make steps right. towards something that seemed obvious, and the just lack of the lack of progress. And like you said, I think that it is clear, been clear the entire time, that the NCAA does offer something. Cause if you go to, you know, an Indiana football game or basketball game, there are tens of thousands of people there, and literally everyone there is wearing merchandise that they, you know, purchase. So there, it's clear that there is a product that people value, but it is about like part of that product is the athletes on the court, and, you know, finding a way to help them benefit from the, you know, the performance that they're putting on for everybody. And it always felt like there was a disconnect between that. And I get how hard that would be to give up part of that, and I don't know, you know, so part of what I was thinking about with NIL is, has the NCAA given up some of that revenue? Like, where will the money come from? Cause there's, you know, there's still only this kind of finite amount of money. And I think we hit on this a little bit too. Will it come out from like people aren't spending so much at the college bookstore? Now they're, you know, supporting the athlete that they like, their brand. I don't know, but I just wonder if the, you know, they haven't kind of, ended up damaging the brand a little bit, where people just associated, like my association has primarily been with Indiana University and whatever athletes are there, whether they're good or not. And it's very different from how I've approached like my NBA fandom. So I always loved the Bulls, but Bulls hadn't started 4-0 since 1998 when Michael Jordan
looking
was
good
there.
Now,
I
yeah.
know. So I'm yeah. I'm back now, right? But in the interim, I was just kind of floating around, and, you know, I have a Luka.
Not to name drop, but I had an event in downtown Detroit a couple of weeks ago that Coach Izzo was honored at, and a bunch of nice. Former players went and surprised him. So we had a chance to talk to him, and he was actually talking to us a little bit about NIL, and he was telling us, and again, maybe don't quote me directly on this.
Yeah, paraphrasing.
Paraphrasing. Coach Izzo basically said, like, we as the coaching staff haven't really been able to participate in these NIL discussions with the players. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's crazy. But I've read a couple of things that seem to corroborate that, is that the staff isn't allowed to be in those discussions. They're supposed to be separate. It's supposed to be right. the player only. That's crazy to me. Like, of course, I could see the negative of the coaching staff being in there trying to guide them. But right. at the same time, like, I didn't know what I was doing when I was 18. If somebody would have said, you know, here's $500 a month to, you know, support, you know, some, you know, restaurant down the street, I'd be like, yeah, I don't care. give it to me. I'll support anything. Right. And then all of a sudden, years later, you're like, I probably shouldn't have been doing that. Without guidance and long-term perspective, it just feels like there's not that support structure that I mentioned from the university, from the staff. And right now it seems like they're not even allowed to do that. So again, trying to find that balance, I think, is going to be absolutely crucial to keeping a locker room steady, to keep, you know, steadiness between sports within the university, and then also between universities as well. And it's that balance that I think is right now is probably the most disrupted.
Yeah. So we talked to Danny Manning recently too, and he's at Maryland.
Love Danny Manning. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was saying that it's kind of the same thing. Like he's trying to offer kind of, you know, a more overall guidance, again, paraphrasing, but it just seems like there's so many forces at work here. Cause you have just kind of, still rules in place where the players can't just get whatever. There's a mm-hmm. set of rules to maintain their status. And we can get into like kind of overtime elite and that whole thing too. Cause that's kind of, right. they're still doing name, image, likeness, but they're still in like high school, but then they lose yeah. their amateur status. And so there's a real complicating factors. And then there's certain areas that, you can benefit, like the Pac-12 network is helping athletes use their highlights, but they don't technically, you know, can't automatically access their highlights depending on, you know, so just so much to navigate. I know IU hired a firm to help athletes navigate, and I've seen that a couple of different schools do that. But I don't even know if I'm a star player, if that's the way I go about it, because then of course they're wanting their piece of the pie, or you know, do I want my own person to help me, you know, help me do it, rather than, you know, do you sign like some of the bigger names, like what was it? Imani Bates signed with, an agency, more of like a global agency. So I don't know what the right answer there, but it is, it does seem like it would be beneficial for the athletes and ultimately the product if there was some kind of, I don't know if regulation is the right way, but at least a set of guidelines to decide who has access to the market. I don't know. I just get a little worried that it's new now, and so it seems like people are mostly wading carefully into it themselves, as to not be like the person who lost the kid's eligibility or become the kind of the cautionary tale from that perspective. But that's going to happen eventually. So I don't know.
That's a good point you made right there at the end, amongst others. I think one of the problems as well that kind of concerns me is that we might not see the outcomes of what's happening right now for several years, right? The shifting of recruiting power, the power conferences maybe taking even more ground over smaller conferences, geographic focus, right? Like impact on young men and women who are getting these opportunities that maybe aren't ready for them in terms of signing these big deals and getting a lot of money. Like, you hate to think this way. I'm definitely very much of an optimist myself, but you start thinking of some of these like behind the music in VH1 where people get money way too early, and next thing you know, they're completely blowing it on horrible things. And,
right.
They're destitute by the time they're 30. Obviously that's an aggressive example, but without support structure in place, again, I go back to thinking when I was in college at Michigan State, man, like I was an idiot. Like I didn't know what was going on. Like you give me a couple hundred extra bucks a month, like I probably would have spent it on stupid stuff. You know what I mean? I'm not saving it the right way. I'm not thinking about these things. Now you start multiplying that by hundreds or thousands of dollars. That's a big, big unregulated territory that I think is concerning. The other point you made too is IU and Michigan State and other universities, they might even use the same one. I know there's a couple of companies out there that are third parties that are working on like group licensing opportunities. They're working on consulting for these schools as well. Sure, that can be good, but as with any business, like they're also there to make money and look after themselves. And you made the point, does a kid like Imani Bates want to sign with something like that where he's saying, hey, yeah, we'll give him 10% of my career earnings. Yeah. That sounds great because I'm only 17 years old. And next thing you know, that's $100 million when he signs some big NBA contract.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wait, I shouldn't have given that much money away. Like, I just think there's some danger zones to be aware of. That again, without guidance from a party like the NCAA or even school guidance or NCAA partnership guidance, compliance partnerships from schools, things like that, without that stuff in place, I just think there can be a lot of different paths forward, and some of them could be good. Some of them could be really bad too. So again, I think it's just too early to say, and I'll definitely be watching with bated breath to see kind of where some of these things go and where the outcomes come out.
Yeah. I just think that, it seems inevitable that there will be some, twists and turns. You mentioned a couple there, but you think about like the record companies back in the day, or music artists, years and years ago when things were just kind of the Wild West, and you sometimes don't know your value. You're a freshman coming in. I think about Oladipo at IU, and I'm sure you could name Michigan State examples where they come in as freshmen, not heralded, and you're like, oh yeah, I'd love to sign up with this company, and then all of a sudden they're the number three pick in the draft, and you've got this this contract hanging around your shoulders, and or you can think about I don't want to pick on the Kentucky guy, but just the Porsche is in my head. Like if he gets pulled over in that Porsche, what happens if you're the you can think about it from the flip side too. Like what happens if you're the company then? Like, do you cut bait on that guy? Are you now standing behind them? I mean, one of the things we talked about,
that's a great point,
Josh talked a little bit about, was just they want to get into the space obviously as well, because it's kind of an inevitability now. But for a lot of companies, they're just kind of still looking at like what is the way to make a positive impact in this space. How can we benefit the athletes and you know, forge relationships rather than just kind of making the headlines.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's good ways forward and bad ways forward. You bring up some really great scenarios too that I hadn't necessarily thought of, right? Like, mm-hmm. what happens if these kids get in trouble? You see it every week, right? A different kid in college is in trouble for a different reason, right? And again, that's same with pros and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
And same for every sport, right? There's lots of coverage there. You know, what happens with the stresses of those things? Does it make student athletes behave better because they know they have money on the line now? Maybe not. Maybe you've got brands dropping kids when they do something stupid, which again tends to happen sometimes every now and again. So it's tough to say. And again, you got that. I love your connection with the record industry because I mean, how many different fantastic musicians, I mean, some of the biggest musicians in the world, they signed these contracts when they were, you know, very, very young, and they basically gave everything away. You look at somebody like Taylor Swift, right? Yeah. And she didn't even have access to her master recordings.
And just,
it's just nuts.
But you don't know. Like, you hit on it. Like you're 18. Like the last thing on my mind, you know, is especially for athletes or artists, and not all of them, but a lot are like caught up in the moment, the performative part of it. And just the, like you said, you don't want to lose that, because part of what we love about watching these guys perform is that they just love the sport, right? There is, I don't want to say that you lose something with the professionalism, because obviously I love watching the NBA too, but there is an understanding, you know, you hear guys in the NBA, I'm sure you've talked to some of those guys that they understand that it's a business, it's a job. And that does change your relationship, you know, making something a transaction changes the shape of it in some ways.
Yeah. The old adage is, you know, you go from calling your college coach to you get to the NBA and you call them by their first name because you make 10 times more money than they do.
Yeah.
And there's a level of mutual respect there, of course, but you lose some of it as well, right? Like it throws that power balance off. Does that start to happen?
Well, does it become about, you know, am I going to get my next deal too, right? Coach just benched me. I've got a deal in the works with Nike or whoever. Yeah. Am I going to get that anymore? You know, that can really change that dynamic. Do I need to put up, you know, stats? What stats do I have to get to get, you know, get that next piece of the pie?
Sure. My that's a great point. My only experience here is you know, I played a couple years overseas in Europe, and that was my only experience getting paid to play sports, and it was fantastic. It was super fun. We talked about that obviously in one of our podcasts where we talked about European basketball and playing overseas. But there was definitely some pressure. It went from being a part of a team and an amateur athlete at Michigan State to all of a sudden you're getting paid, you have a contract, and especially in Europe where where the legal contracts are a little looser than they are here in the States.
Yeah.
Man, they could cut things at any time. If you didn't perform, you didn't put up the right numbers, you weren't getting enough wins, like you got sent home overnight. Like you hear horror stories from guys playing overseas, and it's still the case. So all of a sudden you've got three Americans on a team in Europe, and you know, all they want to do is, hey, I got to score 5 more points a game or I'm going to lose my contract, or I won't get as big a contract next year. Now replicate that same type of ecosystem and layer it on top of the NCAA, because that certainly could happen. You look at a Big Ten program, you look at a Big 12 program. You're telling me, again, going back to impacting the locker room, like a guy who is a role player who's not getting the big contracts, he's not going to say, well, shoot, maybe if I score 3-4 more points a game, maybe I'll get that, you know, a little bit of extra money. And now all of a sudden, instead of playing team basketball and doing the role that he was recruited or she was recruited to do, they're trying to throw a couple more buckets in so they can get a little bit more money on the side, right? It's a silly example, but you get the idea of how these things could run and compound. I think an interesting point is, you know, who loses in all of this? Where are the potential dangers of something like this? And again, I promise I'm a very optimistic person, but this is such a tricky one that I try and look at both sides of it. You know, of course, there's like the very clear one, which is what we talked about already, is like non-revenue generating sports and maybe women based or female based sports. they could certainly take a hit, right? If they're not getting paid at all or getting paid the amount that the male athletes or the big revenue generating sports are getting paid. So that one's very clear. That's been talked about a lot. I don't know the answer there. Mm-hmm. Some sort of balance, I think, is definitely needed there.
Yeah.
You start looking, which I think is interesting. You start looking back, like, look at programs that have had to vacate wins with either minor or major violations. I always think back, again, going back to Ohio State football, I think back 10 years ago or so, where some of the big players for Ohio State football were trading jerseys for tattoos, right, in Columbus. So they take a jersey that they had earned and sweated in and bled in and said, hey, this guy down the street wants this. I'll sign it for him, then I'll get a free, $400 or $500 tattoo. And of course, Ohio State got caught with that. They had to vacate some wins, and then they were not allowed into the postseason the following year, which I think they were undefeated that year. If memory serves, you have to double check and fact check that. But now you look at, well, all that's totally legal now. Like that seems a bit unfair. Like you have all of these
minor violations. Do you restore that? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you restore it? Do you consider it? Do you throw another asterisk in there and say, well, this actually wasn't as bad as we thought it was?
Special symbol.
Looking at more major stuff, then you think about, like, and this goes down a whole nother path, and it's a very complicated topic, but you start looking at recruits for any sport, really, that are based in low income areas, right? You look at inner city kids, you look at kids in rural areas that don't have a lot of money, or they don't have parents that are able to kind of give them money and things like that, or support them necessarily. And all of a sudden, instead of, hey, I want to be the first person in my family to get my college degree, and everyone's so proud of me, it's, hey, where can I go to get the most income? And that's natural, right?
It's a different equation.
If I can make money, send money back to my family. Sorry, what was that?
That's a different equation, though.
It is. Yeah. So now if you start to put money on the table, it's less about where is the best opportunity for me to go play and get an education, and more about where can I make the most money, either for myself or to give back to my family or whatever it might be. And then the last piece, and again, this sounds dramatic, but I wouldn't necessarily skip over this, is without regulation, where is this money for NIL deals coming from? And maybe it's my lack of understanding and knowledge. So if that's the case, feel free to correct
me. It's brand new. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're getting at. It's nice to put a time demarcation down now to talk about it. And we can come back again when we all know more about it and keep going with it. I think that's what's fun, because, 6 months ago, this didn't exist. And then poof, it just materialized.
Sure. Well, when you start mixing sports and money together, you get a lot of unsavory characters, right? There's a lot of money, big program money. There's a lot of unsavory characters that quickly emerge from the woodwork. Again, if you're not exactly sure where this money's coming from, and all of a sudden somebody's coming to you as an athlete saying, hey, I'll give you an extra $1,000 a month, if you support my car dealership or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you're not playing well, what happens, right? Do they pull that money from you? Are there more dire consequences? I don't know. It just seems like it can get into a very slippery slope. And again, I wish I had an answer to it, but without that regulation that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, having some sort of governing body to overlook this, what does that look like? Who's bringing these deals to the table? Who's looking at them? Who's vetting them? Maybe it's an outside company. Maybe it's a third party. It's not the university yet. As it sounds like, and maybe that'll change, but it just seems like there could be a lot of, additional kind of unsavoriness added to the equation if you don't have some sort of support structure on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, how much is going to fall on the coach too? Yeah. I mean, the coaches already have so much on their plates. We talked to Jesse Washington, and he did the book on Coach Thompson, and he talked about just following players to the, to the bus stop and seeing where they got off the bus at, and talking about, Lonzo hanging out with, one of the famous drug kingpins in DC, and just having to have that guy in his office and sit down with him and be like, stay away, and I'm not, again, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but this introduces an element of uncertainty, where if people can now freely approach athletes outside of the coach's kind of purview and offer, money, they might not even know about it. Like, this at least is like, where are you, you know, he can kind of know, like, where are you getting that money from? It's almost like you have that controlled situation where you can know if someone shows up with a brand new car, like, hey, what's going on? But now I can just be like, oh yeah, I got it from, you know, whatever, you know, I signed a deal. And I, that loss of control, I wonder how difficult that will be to manage.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you're talking just about college coaches and programs. I kind of admittedly was thinking about that up until just now, but as you were kind of talking about that, you have to think now of college, or excuse me, of high school programs, right? Yeah. Like, because these kids are getting approached well before they get to college. Yeah. Right. And so now, you know, what about, you know, a top recruit or even a top 500 recruit,
yeah,
you know, in football or basketball in bigger revenue generating sports, they're going to start trying to approach these kids and say, listen, hey, you go to Penn State, you know, I own a store there and we're happy to support you with this mm-hmm. much per month. But, you know, if you don't go to Penn State, you know, well, good luck. But if you do come to Penn State, then there's an additional deal that we can start to negotiate. And obviously, these kids are now in their early to mid teens, getting recruited. Some before that, exactly. Even younger freshmen, mm-hmm. and then now you have to start working with high school basketball coaches, high school football coaches, high school volleyball coaches to try and navigate those waters too, to prepare kids for what this looks like. And again, maybe that's not bad. Maybe having them educated in some of these life skills and understanding what could potentially be and how to prepare yourself to make money and protect yourself and all these things, that might not be the worst thing in the world, but is the infrastructure in place to educate high school coaches across all of these sports, parents even, parents of these players? There's just a lot of kind of waves that are kind of rippling out from this right now that, again, we might not necessarily understand for several years to come. So it's very interesting to think about that.
Well, the NBA can kind of, you know, show the blueprint of it a little bit. I mean, when they had before they had the rookie salary scale, they had, you know, a ton of issues with guys kind of flaming out or not reaching their potential because they got it all up front. And, you know, now it's like you got to work for that second contract. And it just is they offer lots of support to the rookies coming in and have education programs. So I was going to hit on, I just heard something today about this Overtime Elite, which is it's a singularity right now, but it's got some, you know, VC funding. They just set up shop in Atlanta. They've got like 35 players now. They're educating. A lot of these guys are younger in high school. I heard John Hollinger talking about them, and he said a lot of them are not right now pro level prospects, NBA level prospects. They might play other places, so they could go from here and go to the G League or overseas. But, you know, what would your approach, like when you were in high school, would that have been something that could have been tempting to you, do you think? Or was it always kind of a mindset like the college game is what's for me? Because I don't know, like from a competitor's standpoint, I think that's what still would get me to college, like Amani Bates going to Memphis. I mean, I'm sure he got dangled offers from other places, but you know, ultimately for me, it would come down if I was that level. I want to go to the place where it's most competitive, and that still seems like, and most fun, that seems like college still.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that these opportunities wouldn't have had a big impact on my decision to go to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked about why I went to Michigan State and I wanted to win and I wanted to play for Coach Izzo and be part of a family. But maybe that's hypocritical to what I previously said. Like, I don't know. I mean, I committed to Michigan State because I wanted to win. If I wanted more playing time, I mean, there was other universities, even in the Big Ten, that I could have went to. I was getting recruited by Northwestern. I could have went there and probably started as a freshman if I wanted to stay closer home, or if NIL was a thing. Back in the late 90s, maybe I would have stayed home and considered Ohio State or even a smaller school like Miami of Ohio or Toledo or Kent State, right? All great MAC schools. Yeah. And maybe they would have said, okay, well, this is a local kid. You know, maybe some of the local businesses would have given me more money via an NIL deal. Maybe that would have impacted me saying like, hey, I want to go to Michigan State and win, but I can make a lot of money if I go to Toledo. And maybe that would be more important to me. And maybe that would change things. So, you know, if you just want to focus on the education aspect, if you want to focus on the winning aspect, it probably wouldn't have changed But it's hard to say because at the time, again, I started getting recruited when I was a freshman, which is 14 years old, yeah. which is absolutely mind-boggling.
It is.
But at the same time, it's hard to say that it wouldn't necessarily impact you. I'll say back to your point, I'd never heard of Overtime Elite until just a couple months ago, and I think mm-hmm. they're obviously fairly new. I tend to follow – I love college basketball. Obviously, I love NBA basketball, so I follow the process between the two as well, and I always look at kind of what's happening in the draft and with prospects and things like that. I was looking at some of these draft prospect boards, and some of the players were listed. Their college, you know, it's either here's the college you're at, their high school, or they come from overseas. And then I saw a couple guys that were like Overtime Elite. I was like, what the heck is Overtime Elite? And I started down that rabbit hole researching what they were, and I was like, this is so strange. Yeah, it doesn't feel like
it's gonna be Donda Academy with Kanye year. Yeah,
it doesn't. It feels like a shell. Like it's not even like there's a lot of these these high school programs are like these prep.
Right.
Academies will be built for athletics.
This is kind of the evolution of that, right?
That's, yeah. You know, it's like another step beyond that. Yeah. Like that, the prep academies don't even feel right now. All of a sudden it's just like nothing,
yeah.
you know? And you're like, some of these guys are even talking about not even playing in high school and just working out with trainers.
Right.
And well, they going don't, to draft the, combine.
Even their like their season, they don't really have, you know, who do they play, right? They don't really have, they're playing some of the IMG Academy, and they're going to play like some overseas teams who are prepping for like the under 20s. So that, and the, you know, the natural fit would be like play G League teams. But of course, the NBA doesn't want to do that because that's not in their interest, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I would guess that maybe they hope to, you know, scoop up enough people to maybe form like a small league, you know, league, like a city, you know, a city league, you know, maybe they plant in a few different major metropolises and have like enough guys in each city to have maybe a city league or travel from those two leagues and have like a champion from it or something. I don't know, but I mean, the amount of money, like the pictures I saw, you know, that they have a plan at least long term to make money off of the product that they're putting out there too. How they're going to do that. Maybe it is the social media following. So Overtime Elite grew out of, you know, highlights and mm-hmm. social media. So I kind of wanted to get into that because I think that does kind of is a way that the playing field is leveled a little bit for the female athletes, for other sports, where you have this opportunity to create, you know, what the pros do is create a brand of themselves, right? Like the brand isn't Michigan State. It is me, you know, like, you know, I don't need the college's name even on my shirt. It's just, you know, Mikey Williams or whoever, and people follow me. And, you know, I don't know, how do you wrap your head around that, for, you know, Duke, I think, is kind of leading the charge in this area. They've got a co-founder of a company called Air, which is like a content management company. And they are, I mean, they are really out there. They're like, they've got, you know, a bunch of a social media hub is what they call it. And they load everything up and they are just, you know, getting out there, finding those deals for the players and helping them coordinate that stuff. And they kind of see that as the opportunity for the athletes. So I don't know, but it's interesting. It's kind of a different, you know, a third rail almost.
Well, yeah. You're kind of tiptoeing from 10 years ago to now, right?
Yeah, like, right,
and,
exactly.
And there's been such a proliferation of social media and access. Like, if you asked me to show you some highlights from when I was in high school, I'd have to get out a VHS cassette and it probably wouldn't work anymore. And now you got players who are legit bona fide all-stars in the NBA, like Zion Williamson. Like Zion came out of nowhere. Obviously he's incredibly talented, but the first time I saw Zion was like on a YouTube video that my buddies were sharing around, like, yo, look at this guy. Like, this guy's crazy. He's like 16 years old. And you look at like LaMelo Ball, right? Like, this guy's putting up 100 points a game in high school and stuff like that. And you're like, what is this? Like, is this real? And I'm a skeptic and I'm like, I don't know this guy. Like, that's terrible.
Yeah, it looks like, the first Zion ones especially look fake, where he's got like the kid who looks like me and as a freshman. Yeah, I'm like, come on. Like, that's not real.
Yeah. It seems like a Hollywood production. Yeah, here, right?
Exactly.
But, look at the I was a bit of a LaMelo hater, and now
Yeah, he's definitely
he's the real
translated.
deal.
He is.
Yeah, and so you start to see that actually happening right now, what you were just referring to, and you see if I'm a high school kid or a middle school kid coming in high school, obviously I'm following all of those same people on social media, right? I'm following LaMelo and I'm seeing how he came up, and I'm going to say, well, I'm going to try and replicate that too, because that could, potentially help me. Again, it's so overwhelming though to think, I was talking earlier, like these guys are 13, 14, 15 years old. Like when I was that age, all I cared about was playing GoldenEye with my buddies after school, right?
Nice.
Like who got
Solid.
first pick,
Solid,
who got to be odd job versus,
yeah.
and that's the type of stuff we were worried about. Like trying
Yeah.
to throw, like, oh man, I got to get my social media posting in, or I got to get to the gym and get some highlights in. Like,
Yeah.
I bet just feels so overwhelming to me. But again, maybe I'm just proving that I'm getting old and cranky, and that just seems like so much work to do all of that. And again, just puts more pressure on these kids
Yeah.
to worry about more than just, being a kid and playing basketball. And that's where my worry lies. I've got two little girls, and I'd start thinking about, if they were to get into sports, like having to go through that type of pressure. It just seems like a lot. But
Yeah, what
again,
would your
maybe that's
approach
the
be
direction that we're
with
going in.
social media? Just, I mean, obviously it's an
Oh man.
evolving take, but I mean, they're gonna want to be a part of it,
Yeah.
and then it's sort of a feedback loop where it's like the more followers you get, the better it is. But of course, that comes with all sort of a you mentioned some of the kind of responsibilities, like, oh, getting a post up, but it also comes with like tons of people hating you all of a sudden for
Yeah.
no particular reason other than
Sure.
that you have a bunch of followers. And you know, it just, I think that part, I have to say, just a real positive for the athletes has been, I've been super impressed by this whole generation, you know, from LeBron on down to kind of some of the guys coming up now, how they've navigated that, you know, the fact that they have, you know, the LeBron has more followers than the NBA, NFL, and NHL combined. You know, it's kind of amazing to put yourself out there in that public of a manner, and you know, be successful at it. Like, I don't know if I'd want to be that public of a persona, no matter the, you know, price tag at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, when me and my former college teammates get together, inevitably we always thank God that social media didn't exist when we were in college. We're like, geez, it was hard enough to get through practice and try and have a girlfriend and try and get to the bar every once in a while and hang out and just be a college kid, let alone having to worry about, checking out Twitter and everyone's like, you suck. Like, oh my God, that would be just absolutely brutal. So we always say the same thing. Again, maybe we're just marking ourselves as turning into cranky old
For
folks. But
sure, yeah.
on the other side, you're right. I mean, if there is structure to it, which I've said that a couple times in this conversation, if there's structure to it, if these kids are growing up with social media, we didn't, right? Like if they grow up with it, maybe they can handle it a little bit better with some sort of regulation in place. I also think too, like, again, I grew up in a super, super small town in Ohio, like with no exposure. So if I had the ability to be a freshman right now, like I think that would change everything, right? Number one, the AAU circuit is different now than it used to be. You've got, different opportunities, but just the exposure, being able to put my highlights on YouTube, maybe that's a really good benefit. Looking at it from a positive standpoint, maybe you start to get more exposure for these student athletes in high school that maybe wouldn't have as much exposure because they're not from some big city or some big public school league. You start to get exposure. So maybe there's some positivity to it as well. So looking at both sides, I think it would be overwhelming personally for my daughters. I think it would be overwhelming, but it could be a really positive thing if done well and done with some sort of oversight, not just a free for all, which again, I think that seems to be a microcosm of our entire conversation is if it's a free for all Wild West, it can be disastrous. If there is some regulation and structure to it, I think it can be really good. So I think that applies to the NIL deals. It applies to additional support and payment and benefits for college athletes. It applies to social media, right? The different things that we talked about, recruiting, even like as long as there's structure to it, I think there can be some positivity in there.
Okay. Well, I like that. Well, let's wrap up with two Michigan State centric. So you have some kind of insider kind of relationship with the Michigan yeah. State story. So I'll just sure. kind of lead it off just like that and let you take it where you want to, because I thought it was a fascinating story just with an alumni stepping up and being willing to provide money for athletes. Again, where we started at, where we were like, all right, how do you do this? You know, NCAA yep. is not what are other avenues? So this was someone's solution to that question.
Yeah. So in my opinion, obviously I'm good friends, but so we're speaking about my former teammate, Matt Ishbia. So Matt, mm-hmm. If you guys recall Michigan State history, he was the last guy at the end of the bench. They called him the human victory cigar because he only played when we were up by about 30. He's a very good basketball player.
Yeah.
He's very talented, very skilled, was a great high school basketball player, but just a little bit too small to play in the Big Ten, but a great practice player. Push Mateen Cleaves every day in practice.
Nice.
Was a great bench guy, a great locker room guy. So Matt has gone on to be incredibly successful in business and was able to, once these NIL deals opened up earlier this year, he was able to work with Michigan State to put something in place for all of the men's basketball players and all of the football players. Hmm. And what I think is really interesting about it and what so I he, like about this.
So he coordinated that with the university then?
Yeah. Well, sorry.
Okay.
He approached the university.
I got it.
First and foremost, just to say I'm interested in doing something. Got it. Ultimately,
okay.
He had to work with each player individually. So each player individually, from my understanding and speaking with him and another teammate of mine that works with Matt, is that they actually sign contracts directly with each player without the university there. Right. So yes, that would go against what we talked about earlier. But approached the university, said, I'm interested in doing this. They said, all right, we'll line up the communication with the players, see what you can put together.
I like that.
What I like about it is, obviously, this still apply. All of the things we talked about already still apply to this, right? Mm-hmm. The goods and the bads and the regulations and things like that. But what I like about it is, number one, Matt's a former athlete himself. So he isn't just some random person that said, hey, I want to support this university. Even an alum, right? Like this is somebody who played men's basketball and was very successful at the university. So he's going back to give back to his program, just like Draymond Green came back a couple of years ago and gave a couple million dollars to build some
weight rooms and things like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Very nice.
Yeah.
So Matt has done lots of great things for the university, including this. But what Matt said was, listen, I don't want to come in and just, put some, $20,000 deal with the quarterback and the point guard. He basically said, I want to give each player on the team from the quarterback to the very last walk on that just barely made
because he knew
walk on punter because he was a walk on himself. He wanted to make sure they were taking care of. He gave them all the exact same amount. So each player got the exact same amount. It's a monthly stipend. And again, this goes back to the conversation we had the first time when we talked about paying players. And again, something I think the NCAA could have done is just give a little bit of extra on that scholarship. So essentially that's kind of what Matt was able to do with this is say, with basketball and football team, I want to tack a little bit of extra money on for these guys. I talked to some of the players recently. We went down to the Michigan State Miami football game and ran into some of the football players. I've talked to some of the best. I mean, they're thrilled. They're like, this is amazing. Like, I've got a little extra money to go out to dinner every once in a while. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's not inconsequential to their overall income. So they're absolutely thrilled about it. I think everyone is still feeling it out, but it feels really good. Now, again, just being realistic, this is for the basketball and the football team, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily apply to other sports within the university. And so that's, again, where it starts to throw off balance, right? Is that, is that's great for those two sports. And I think it's done very fairly. And I think it's done incredibly well. But it doesn't necessarily apply to other sports, to women's sports, to non-revenue generating sports. And again, that's where the discrepancy comes into play. So I don't know how to necessarily solve that. Again, I've always said I think there's some interesting steps, and it's not a complete free-for-all. It's not like, somebody came and said, here's $1 million and a free Escalade. It's like, let's do this in a thoughtful, even keel way. And I think something like that could potentially be replicated to other sports as well and other universities. So I think it's interesting, and I think that makes me feel a lot better about NIL than some of these other deals that I'm reading about that are higher dollar amounts and a little less regulated.
Yeah, it seems like, again, like that feels like the relationship is built in there on a lot of different levels, like doing it the right way, following kind of a bit of chain of command where it's like, I'm not just going to a free for all, but I've got a plan and a rationale behind it. And, you know, it just feels, I'm not necessarily just after it for notoriety or a, you know, a quick win. And I think that's ultimately my hope, is that there are, like, you know, the companies and the universities help the athletes to the extent that they can to navigate those waters and, you know, attach themselves to things that they can be proud of and to companies that will be, you know, proud to represent them too. Cause I think you're right. On the flip side of that, it is a real opportunity for a lot of these guys to just get a little bit of walk around money. Most won't ever be pros. Most won't ever make a lot of money, but I mean, in college, right, it doesn't take a lot to change your week. If someone had walked up and gave me $50, I would have made for a good night, right? Yeah, I'm good. I'm eating the big pizza every night instead of the little pizza.
So yeah, we were just back in East Lansing not too long ago, and we went to some of the, you know, grabbed a beer at one of the bars there just to enjoy the weekend. And I think the beer was like $2.
Oh,
I was
like, man, you're like, wow.
I forgot how cheap beer is.
Yeah, think about $50. Man, might be too much. Maybe I need to pare that back even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I love the idea of finding a more fair way to support student athletes. I think there's other options out there, and we'll see how they play out. Again, I think it's still really early. Some of these things, if they go the way of what we just talked about with Matt and, you know, giving an equal amount and a very fair amount to players, and that can be expanded even further in a university, I think that type of stuff feels really good.
Yeah.
There's other things, obviously, that make you feel bad that feel very unregulated and unstructured. And if we can stay away from those, I think, and find some sort of middle ground, I think that there could be some really good potential. And again, hopefully, what happens is the student athletes are better supported here, and it becomes more about them than it is about anything else. So that's what the ultimate hope is, for
definitely.
Sure. So we'll see.
We'll see. Right. All right. We're ending on this. We got to get your NIL players from Michigan State history. So a lot of times, you know, you get asked, like, who are the best players in Michigan State history? But this one is, if you're setting up an NIL studio to market these guys, who would be your picks? And Charlie Miller from IU is pretty funny. He picked himself first, and then he picked Andre Patterson because he could sing, so he's getting a singing career built in there. And Danny had a few funny answers too. He picked Wilt Chamberlain that first pick, solid, you know. Didn't pick himself though, so interesting. So you can go any direction with this, but just opportunity to take a different look at some of the greats in Michigan State history and how they might market themselves to the masses, you know, with all the benefits that they'd have if they were playing today.
Yeah. Oh man, this might be one of the best questions ever, but it's also very tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, yeah, you want to say the best players because, you know, I'm a marketing guy myself. Now that's what I do. I'm marketing advertising strategy. So like this is right up my alley.
We'll get back next week after you had some time to really ponder.
Yeah. Draw out a couple business plans here. Let me throw a couple off the top of my head. And as I know, as soon as we end this call, I'm going to immediately regret probably half of these and be like, God, I should have done this one. It would have been a lot better. But all right, if we're talking about NIL deals, marketing, local kids. Okay. All right. So number one, easy, Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
He's our number one at Michigan State.
That's like the Wilt Chamberlain one. Like, you
best smile in the game. How could you not? The guy's name's Magic, right?
He could probably re-enroll now and still and just like lumber up and down the court and still be number one.
He could still play. Yeah. I mean, he's the best. He's from Lansing too, right? So number one, he's from Lansing. He goes to East Lansing. He's the local guy.
Triple threat.
Took him to a championship. I mean, he's probably one of the most marketable sports figures in history, let alone just for Michigan State. Yep. So that's an easy one. If I had to do another basketball guy, since that's my sport, I'd probably go with Mateen Cleaves. Very, very similar reasons, right? You had Mateen coming just down the road from Flint. He, along with a couple of his co-stars from Flint, kind of started the Flintstones. Ooh, if you remember
great,
that back
great,
in the late 90s.
Great marketing right there. Yeah. I can imagine the t-shirts already.
Yep. They're already out there. There's tons of them. And we used to see them all the time back when we played Flintstones. There's actually a hotel in East Lansing that just opened up, which is really awesome. They actually have custom made Flintstone wallpaper that has like characters of Mateen, Antonio Smith.
He needs to be looking into that NIL right now.
Yeah. I talked to him. I saw Mateen last night. We actually, believe it or not, we play basketball still on Tuesday.
Nice.
Night.
Yes.
So I saw Mateen last night.
Shirts and skins, or are you guys in Penny?
God, okay. No.
My shirts and skins starts next week. So, you know, you got to stick with it.
I don't know. You don't want to see us.
I know. And me neither. I don't want to see myself.
So we'll do Magic and Mateen. I got to go two sports star, Kirk Gibson.
Ooh, okay.
Played football and baseball. Obviously became one of the greatest Detroit Tigers baseball players of all time. He's from Waterford, Michigan, which is one or two towns over from where I'm living right now. Right. So again, another local guy, but two sports. Man. Come on. You can market two sports anywhere. Yeah, he was a stud in football and basketball.
Nice.
I got to get a good football player in there. Let me think. There's a lot to choose from. I'll go back a little further to be fair. Bubba Smith. Probably one of the most dominant defensive
great name again. Bubba.
Come on, Charles Bubba Smith.
Get out of here.
I think he's from Texas, if I have that right. Doesn't matter because he played at Michigan State in the 60s, national championship, Big Ten championships. Bubba Smith, just a house, and went on to the NFL, was an absolute dominant player there too. So I got to throw Bubba in there. That's a tough one. I'm probably going to regret that because it's probably another football player.
With Texas and Bubba, you got a good start there. I mean, you can really sell that. You might have some competition, but you got a solid
Texas barbecue restaurant called Bubba's.
Oh my gosh. Texas barbecue in Michigan. Yeah. That's exactly, imagine that. Right? Yeah.
Whole new market. Yep. Whole new market. I'm going to go with a female on my last one.
I like that.
When I played at State, one of my favorite women's basketball players was a girl named Kristen Haney. Mm. She's from just near East Lansing as well. So she's also a local girl.
That's awesome.
And Michigan State women's basketball has always been pretty good, but I feel like right when we were there in the late 90s, early 2000s, led by Kristen and a couple other really great players, they, you know, won some Big Ten championships, really kind of turned the program, and Michigan State's been a great program since then. So I feel like she's really turned things around. She went on and played in the WNBA.
Cool.
She won a WNBA title. I think she's still the career leader in assists and maybe points and steals. Like, if you look at Michigan State women's basketball, she was an absolute legend. So going back to our entire conversation,
you need to get her on the line after this and get her in that Flintstones motel right next, right after you get Mateen's deal done. Exactly. She's right. She's right next there. Yeah.
So you got people out there who incorrectly market, you know, or argue that you can't market men's versus women's sport. I would, again, that's always been one of my biggest problems is I look at somebody like her, like Kristen, and I mean, she was about as marketable as they come.
Yeah.
Both from a success standpoint, she was just super well put together. Like, she's super smart, super talented, broke all these records, went on to the WNBA, was super successful, and a local girl too. So like, you throw that in the same bucket as like Mateen and Magic and Kirk, like Gibson, just being local folks, like how could you not NIL market the heck out of those folks?
So. That's great. Yeah,
I'm getting all excited. I'm like, screw it, break all the rules, give them all the money, make sure I put my logo.
See,
on
that's the
jersey.
Point. Yeah, see, you get spinning on it because there is an excitement tied to the athletes, right? I saw a Diana Taurasi franchise just put out a Diana Taurasi shirt, and I'm like, man, she's just so much fun to watch. And I think it does open up possibilities because sometimes the schools themselves can get kind of stodgy or stuck in the ways. But now if you're promoting yourself, like, go get it. So the entrepreneurial spirit, I think, is something that at least can move the needle, you know, as long as we can navigate the pitfalls that are in there.
Yeah. I'll have to caveat, I would not select myself. I don't think I'm very marketable at all. So
come on, the cowboy.
You could be
in Bubba's commercials, you know, for the Texas barbecue place. At least get you some side income.
I'll be in the background.
You get some walk around money out of that.
I'll be in Bubba's commercial. That's right. Yeah. I would not select myself, but maybe that connection. But yeah. great question. I love that one. Keep that one going.
Well, good, man. Well, we're gonna get you back on. We're gonna do try to do an all time overall NIL list. So kind of a snake draft. So we'll get some people on here, and if you're interested, I'll reach out to you and get you back on.
Man, listen, I always love chatting with you, really do, and you appreciate this is a great topic, and I appreciate the way you approach it too, because it's not a cut and dry conversation. It we could probably talk 10 more times and still not come to a solution on this one. But it's really interesting. You got some great points. It's nice to hear some of the previous and prior podcasts you've had with other folks talking about this. It's just nice to get different perspectives. There's no right or wrong answer here, but I think everyone's in agreement that putting some sort of structure in place and moving in the right direction here to support student athletes is a really good thing. So I don't know what that looks like exactly, as I've said a couple times, but I think there's at least some interesting movement here that we should keep an eye on. So
perfect. Well, once you get Mateen and Bubba's deals put in place, we'll get you back on and talk about those.
Sounds good. All right, man.
Thank you for listening to the 19.9 podcast. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, make sure you do. And while you're at it, leave us a rating or review. 5 stars only, like the basketball camp. We also have links to all of 19.9 social media so you never miss a release. Until next time.